late show is over. And the city fast asleep. And I'm lost in a world. That's just too cold and deep. I've turned so many ways. I'm spinning like a tower. And I wish that I could get off. Or get this world to stop. I'm a stranger and afraid. I'm a stranger and free. I'm a stranger and free in a world I never meet.
In one way or the other, so many of us feel just like that, a stranger and afraid. In a world we never made. From New Orleans, Louisiana, that's Rock and Roll Hall of Famer Dr. John with A World I Never Made. It's from Our New Orleans, a benefit album. It was a joint effort involving several artists who helped raise funds to ease the suffering of survivors of Hurricane Katrina, which battered and devastated the city and much of the Gulf Coast in August of 2005. And much of that sentiment now descends on the city of Orlando, dealing with the aftermath of this mass killing, this massacre at a gay club on Sunday, early Sunday morning. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and we continue the discussion from yesterday. President Obama expected to hit the campaign trail to support Hillary Clinton. Instead, will be in Orlando today paying his respects to the victims of the June 12th mass shooting by a lone gunman at a gay club there. 50 people, including the gunman, Omar Mateen, 29 years of age, died in the carnage, and 53 others were wounded, many of them sustaining multiple and severe wounds. There's been a global outpouring of sympathy and sorrow and support. And at the same time, we note the politicization of this tragic, tragic event. And so we continue the discussion that we started yesterday. And, of course, you can call in at 888-874-4888. But let's first talk about what has been happening. And very important to note that this is all occurring, this is all happening literally as the primary season comes to a close. Today happens to be the final primary in Washington, D.C., and you find out in the world, really, although we're encouraged not to see connective tissue between and among things, so many things here involved in this awful, awful tragedy are connected. The issue in Washington, D.C. ought to be today, the leading issue, the top issue, should be where the candidates stand on statehood for Washington, D.C. And although leading Democrats and some Republicans and others, as a matter of fact, but leading Democrats have sometimes given lip service to the idea, we find that it is really not that important. What is important in Washington, D.C., we're told, especially from the Democratic side of the aisle, is that you get out and vote, and of course vote Democrat, and give Hillary the push that she needs to be not just victorious, but super victorious. But this is interesting, is it not? Statehood for Puerto Rico was not high on the agenda either. The most important thing, especially from the Democrats, is that you get out and give us the vote. Give Hillary the vote. But in Orlando, in case anybody is paying attention, we see a very different response here. And it is not because of the enormity of the tragedy alone, and we must acknowledge it is an awful, awful number of people killed and hurt in just one horrible act of vengeful violence. But we have to see, and you can't ignore it, this is what is so important, to always pay attention to the environment of things. The reason the president himself has to be there in person today is that the people, the vast majority of people involved here, are from a very vigorous political base. And it is not just the United States. They have global power. They have organized themselves. So the victims, the survivors, the relatives and families and friends, seeking to make sense of this, seeking all kinds of help, are not only benefiting from the largesse or the humanity of people and corporations wanting to respond in a humanitarian way. JetBlue, for example, today is announcing that it will provide free flights to relatives trying to find out or to inquire or to look after friends and families who are connected with this horrible tragedy. That kind of outpouring we've seen before. But we look at the political response on the part of the president, and I showed you the difference in his attitude when we compare his response in the immediate aftermath of the killing of 9 people, including not just a pastor of the church, Mother Amy, I think it's the Mother Amy Church, if I'm not mistaken, but in South Carolina, where this young man, Dylan Roof, went in and executed 9 people, committing, in my view, I said it at the time, this was also an assassination because the pastor was an elected state senator, which the president just did not even make a note of. This was an assassination. He talked about how tragic it was, and his attitude was, you know, the comforter in chief. His attitude Sunday to Sunday's event, the immediate aftermath of that event, was entirely different. And what compelled it was the political strength of the community, which demanded respect at a particular level. Not just the gay movement in the United States, but the global movement, which is to say that this organized community all over the world sent a message: we are watching you, and you better do the right thing. And so far, the administration is performing almost a textbook case of response. They're watching everything they're doing, and they're following orders because they're under the global glare now. You can't mess around now. Your every move is being watched. So we see here, in the middle of all of this, the organized political strength of a community galvanized by what they have in common, which was and still remains in many parts of the world their alienation from society, the adverse effects and adverse impact of public policy caused them to come together. And they are now a global power. So they can flex their global muscle to affect local or domestic policies and outcomes. This is phenomenal. There's a lesson here. Now, if I were to bring this as a comparison with other distinct communities, we should have that attitude. Let's say African Americans should have this attitude, a similar attitude of flexing their political muscles on matters that relate to the global, the diaspora. This administration's treatment of Africa and the Caribbean, its foreign policies in these places, its intervention with negative consequences in places like Honduras and Haiti. This is what used to be. Dr. Gerald Horn tells us this, that a lot of the progress of Black America is directly related to the flexing of political influence and political muscle outside of the United States. Here we see an extraordinary example of it. The flexing of political muscles outside of the United States, and even within it, of course, but particularly outside of the United States, to respond to an internal matter within the United States, is keeping the president on down in check. That's a heck of an achievement. That's one incredible achievement. And you can't ignore it. Because what do we see? The subtext here: most of the victims are people of color. In their own communities, their own political communities, they would probably not get this any respect. They're getting protection, and understand this, how I'm using all of these words. They are politically covered because they belong to an organized political entity that has a global impact. This is amazing power. Now, what they choose to do with that power is something else, but we can't ignore the fact that it has shown its muscle. And correctly so. And this is what we talk about when we talk about the power of organization. When communities are deemed as being politically unprotected, nobody gives a damn. There isn't a big hubbub about anything. Because they know you have no political muscles to flex. You can't affect anything. You can't affect the outcome of anything. But instantly the message was received. This horrible thing cannot be ignored and will not be ignored because there's a global political power factor engaged here. And everybody better walk the right way on this one. So, as important as it was for Barack Obama to have stayed close to the nation's capital today on the last day of the primary, as important as it is for him to be at Hillary's side as he officially begins to stump for her tomorrow, he better find his butt in Orlando, physically there today, publicly doing whatever it is he's got to do to indicate he's commander-in-chief, he's on top of things, he's carefully monitoring the situation, everybody's on point and accountable to him, and he's doing everything possible to see to the families and to bring this matter to some form of a just close. The deaths have already occurred. You cannot do anything about that. But certainly, he's looking good. He's making an effort. I'm going to look good here. Not because he wants to, but because he has no other choice. Of course, we see on the other side of the aisle the same kind of vitriol we have seen so far in the development of this presidential campaign. I'm referring to Donald Trump and his Neanderthal approach to politics and life. Still talking that nonsense, which I'm not going to repeat here. I'm not going to use the airwaves to promote that kind of racist, vitriolic talk. But this event gives him added zeal, a resurgence of energy to appeal to that group that we know has always been there. I tackled yesterday this idea, the promotion of revisionist history, and by none other than the president himself, that this is the largest or the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. Well, it would be if your knowledge of history began in the year 2000. But as I said yesterday, if you talk to the First Nations peoples, they will tell you a different history altogether, that places mass killings and mass shootings in the millions of people of lives lost since the 1500s until now. So let's not have a repeat of that nonsensical phrase about the deadliest mass shooting in U.S. history. That figure makes sense only to those who are intentionally ignorant of history, of U.S. history. So I'll open up the phone lines and we'll talk from your perspective about how this horrible event, in what ways do you see that this event, this tragedy, this massacre has been and will continue to be in this presidential primary climate, it will continue to be exploited politically. And you will explain to us in what ways that will happen and what we should look for, what we can anticipate and therefore gird ourselves for. But first, we'll take this short break and then come back to your comments at 888-874-4888.
With a soul that's made of tin, so I know in my soul there's no way I can win. I try. But there's no place I can go. And there's no one here who knows me. All right. And no one here I know.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM, your favorite station. I'm Eutrice Lead. We're talking about the politicization of the tragic massacre that occurred early Sunday morning in the city of Orlando and the consequences of that, how this is being used by the political powers that be to bring us to a whole different reality. This is propaganda, and the use of propaganda playing itself out before our very eyes. This is not at all to minimize the severity and the solemnity of this horrible event, but we have to also put it in perspective to see that what we really need to know, we will not know, because there's no interest, there's no benefit to us, the public, knowing the things we ought to know. But we are carefully being shepherded in a direction, a predictable direction, the media playing a very, very important role in shaping our attitudes, in shaping the so-called information that we have, in shaping what we think. And it is a hot political season. Maat, you're on the air.
Yes. Good day to the family. I must wish you a happy birthday, fellow Gemini, because my schedule has been such, I'm a night owl, that I'm struggling to stay, but I am up this afternoon. And thank you for taking my call, because I'm expecting someone in a few minutes. So I'll be brief. But I would like to say that it even goes beyond the use of political propaganda. One of the things that I was anxious to see as this all went down in Orlando, and it's very much a show. So Dateline had a special on NBC, Terror in Orlando, and it's, you know, its own music and all. But I want to reference Dr. Kevin Barrett, Islamist scholar, Arabic scholar, and also a European American that's been a Muslim for some time and a lover of Islam. He did a piece that you can get on Veterans Today or his blog, Truth Jihad, and the headline is Orlando Nightclub Shooting, Another False Flag. And the subheading says, it sure walks, talks, and quacks like one. And you see this doofy photo of someone with not a beard, young guy. And it says Omar Mateen, Patsy, or MK Ultra mind control slave. So most of us can vibe with JFK, Malcolm X, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, the most luminaries, and we know that William Pepper documented and through a trial that, you know, the story we would get. So my question to everyone is, why do we take these narratives, stories at face value? David Icke said it best. He said, they have us watching a movie. So, Utrice, I'm going to send this article, link it over to you, as I also want you to know that I want you to have many, many more happy and healthy years.
Thank you. But before you go, could you tell us what you think about what is happening? And do you sense personally that we are being engineered into, as you called it, a movie? We're being engineered into a scenario, but for what reason? What is the political, what is a political angle that you see here?
Good question. Yes, well, for one of the things that struck me with this whole thing is that, oh, horrific and unbelievable and so violent, but nobody talks about the perpetual state of war under the guise of warring against terror, right? And the drones, the robotic mechanism of warfare now, which, you know, they're even going to do it so that the computer, they won't even need the guy behind this, quote, video game, unquote. And, you know, it'll be a machine that will be deciding how many to kill and who to kill. So all of that continues. The people just, I mean, it just goes on and on. We need to deal with the Achilles heel, and that is September 11th, 01. You know, and because the idea that you could even have a war on terror is ludicrous in itself. But all of that is going to continue with any of these candidates. And Bernie Sanders, who I vibe with, the most genuine, he also thinks that the kill list that Obama has been having, I think it's every Tuesday, who they decide to kill without any due process. And also, Bernie's down with the drone, so we're in quite a pickle.
Thank you for your call today. 888-874-4888. In what ways has this tragic event, this mass killing in Orlando, in what ways is it being politicized, in your view? Lincoln from New York, what do you think?
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Lincoln.
I want to start by counting my thing in this statement. Murder is murder. I think when I see this tragedy, I think of Hillary Clinton coming on the air and boasting about murdering Gaddafi.
Let me ask you, Lincoln, are you on speakerphone? Because we're getting a feedback here. Okay.
Oh, no, I'm at a place where there is a television going on.
Okay.
Let's deal
with the specificity of it. In what ways, as you have been monitoring, I'm sure we all have, we are being bombarded with news. This is a major story by any definition. It is a huge story, a major, major event. In what ways do you see it being politicized?
Okay, and that's why I said murder is murder. It's the way we select what we respond to as outrageous. Let's think about that fellow who was killed by the state in Georgia, that African-American fellow, who was executed. When he was executed, the whole world was in uproar about it because there was no evidence to prove that this guy, without a doubt, committed murder. There was not a word from Obama about that particular execution. When that young woman who was a law student was spoken out, when some radio announcer said something, you know, outrageous about her, called her a slut or something, Obama got on the phone instantly and called her and expressed how he felt horribly about that. He did that at a particular time when the elections were about to occur, and he did that to win the votes of white women and women in general, but specifically white women. And it was the same thing like when Kimmel, they spoke about supporting gay marriage. And it was to win the gay vote. So I'm saying now, just like you, in response to this, it is a big political audience that he's appealing to. And that goes to show you how they pick and choose what to respond to. And it makes you really start to think about what this lady even just said, about whether or not we are actually being manipulated into thinking a specific way. Hello?
Yes, I'm listening to you.
And I hesitate to say, yes, this would also false flag, because I don't want for people to minimize what I am saying and thinking, okay, I'm another conspiracy theorist. You know, but we should not exclude anything, but we should look at how they respond to and select which murder they respond to, because I don't see the murder of those people any worse than the drone strike of Obama. People are people. Obama wouldn't want his children to be murdered, but he acts as if it's okay for other little children to be murdered throughout the world. And what I'm saying in general is that we should stop being outrageous about the deaths that occur in America and not be as outraged about the deaths that America is inflicting on the rest of the world, not just America, but also England, France, etc. And I will leave room for others to make a comment.
Thank you so much for your input today. From Florida, hey, Ray, what are you thinking?
Yes, hi, Idris.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thanks. Well, this is in your state. And what is your reaction to the way this entire tragedy from all these different spheres of influence, whether it's from the White House or from the media, how do you think it's being handled, and why is it being handled in a particular way?
Well, the reptilian known as Hillary made two comments that really speak to using this event in Orlando to erode due process. In one clip, I heard her say that anyone on a watch list should not be able to buy a firearm. And that, you know, at first blush, well, maybe she's got something. She also said that anyone who is not allowed to get on an airplane should not be allowed to buy a firearm. And again, you could have an initial, you know, positive reaction to that. But you got to think beneath that. If you're put on a watch list, it happens with no due process at all. You can't appeal it. You can't find out what the allegation is against you that put you on the list in the first place. Remember, under Bush 43, Senator Ted Kennedy, probably as a practical joke, was put on the no-fly list. And as a senator, he was able to get himself off it. But you listen to other people, you know, that have been held up at airports just countless times because maybe they were the boyfriend of a political reporter or something like that. Hillary is trying to spin this into, a very fascist solution. And incidentally, I'm also concerned from film that I saw on the CBS Evening News last night where it would appear that the police were firing kind of wildly into the building due to the number of bullet holes on the outside of the building right near the hole that they knocked in the wall. And that begs the question, were any hostages killed or injured by friendly fire? I have no substantiation, but that little clip of the bullet holes coming from outside is disturbing.
Is there is there something that you expected to know or about this tragedy that you haven't so far gotten information about, or that you expected would be of major concern to these parties who are expressing all this concern, the president, the media, the law enforcement authorities, and so forth. And we are still at the point of, well, who was this guy? and how did he get a gun, an assault weapon? And this is where the conversation is. Where should the conversation be, in your view?
The narrative is being steered towards terror and towards Islam. But, you know, why not look at the people who knew this guy the best? His parents and his ex-wife. The ex-wife said, you know, he was very violent. He was taking steroids. And that should be a major clue, you know, as to a possible trigger for violent behavior. I think, you know, we can have Senate hearings about Mark McGuire and the other guy, Barry Bonds, both very surly guys who admitted taking steroids to get their, you know, home run averages up. And no one looks at the fact that there's a lot of civilian use of steroids and that it really, really impacts an individual's emotional well-being. There's no focus on that in this country at all. So I think
why then, even though we're hearing a far more, quote, civilized, unquote, discussion about Islamic terrorism, Trump is not making any effort at all to disguise his racist views, but we have, you know, Hillary Clinton saying something as outrageous as, I'm not afraid to say the words radical Islamic terrorism. You know, she's still basically arguing at the same level as a Donald Trump on this. If there is, in fact, that particular element involved, a person with deep religious or so-called religious conviction taking this route of murdering people in the name of whatever, is that not a legitimate course to follow, not a legitimate national discussion?
Well, here's what I discovered this morning. That guy, Omar, had been a patron at Pulse for 3 years. And he was often got so drunk he had to be carried out, and sometimes he had to be restrained. So he had enormous anger issues. But what if, I'm just spitballing here, but what if he could not reconcile homosexual feelings that he had with his religion of Islam, and if that, you know, tore him apart on some sort of psychic level?
Especially since his father is supposedly pretty much to the right on these questions. And his ex-wife also said that she suspected that he was gay. Other people have come forward and said he was regularly seen at this gay club. So there may be another dimension to this other than that he was some agent of ISIS, and this is a case of terrorism. In your view, is it a legitimate thing to throw into the discussion on a national level the Islamic connection and the terrorism connection?
The Islamic connection, if you're going to talk about Islam, then you're going to have to talk about all three Abrahamic religions being at the root of war. I think all three have to be taken together. The Vatican doesn't get a break. Judaism doesn't get a break. Islam doesn't get a break. None of them do, but they are all three responsible for a great deal of conflict, and that should be the dialogue.
And mass murder, as a matter of fact.
Yes, mass of course, murder. Mass murder. Yep.
That's right. Yep. So what is the protection that you have in this very, very politicized world about this event? About this horrible tragedy, what is keeping you steady?
Squeegeeing my third eye, to quote Bill Hicks. just remembering that a lot of propaganda gets thrown at events like this, and just constantly applying critical thinking and filtering.
Thank you for that. Yeah. That's excellent advice. Thank you. Now, this in no way minimizes, and I want that underscored, this does not at all minimize the horror of this mass killing. It doesn't. We're saying keep your head screwed on right, because it is at times like this that the machinery, the system, goes into overdrive, and it has only one main purpose, and that is to maintain itself. Henry from Chicago, what are you thinking?
Hi, Yatrice. How's it going?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good. That was an interesting thing that you and the last caller brought up about the situation with the gunman and how he patronized the establishment before. And it kind of got me thinking about cognitive dissonance in regards to his situation and also, too, with our society. Because, you know, looking at this situation, you know, from Chicago and, you know, reading the reports on what's been going on, I mean, it sort of bogs my mind how a lot of political groups who strike out against, you know, gay marriage and even the gay lifestyle are coming to, you know, a reconciliation with this, you know, with this situation. And sometimes I kind of feel like, you know, that itself is political, because in terms of what I hear from, you know, these certain sectors of people who, you know, demean the gay lifestyle, it's like, you know, now all of a sudden, and I know there are some people who are just, you know, being humanistic about this thing, but at the same time, I just can't, you know, I just can't rule out the political aspect of why they're, you know, they're supporting this. And looking at mainstream media, you know, the three things that we normally see out of this situation is surface topics that I always, you know, tend to see from, you know, mass shootings like this. You got terrorism, you got gun control, and then there's the subject of immigration. And all of these things, you know, the media wants us to look at the surface of it, but not look at the deeper level of the situation on why, you know, this situation, you know, happened. And that itself is a political ploy as well, because, you know, as you know, with terrorism, you know, they want people to believe, well, there are good guys and there are bad guys, and we're the good guys, they're the bad guys. And then that's the end of the discussion. And then with gun control, now, as much as I agree that semi-automatic rifles should not be given to, you know, to regular citizens, I do agree that people still have a right to arm themselves, but I think this is the first part of disarming, you know, the population, which to me leads to colonialism. And, you know, that's what colonial powers did in other countries. The first thing they did was disarm the people. And then you talk about immigration, you know, with this racist, ideology, you know, that itself explains, you know, the political, reason for that situation. So, yeah, there's a lot of political points, that's pointing to this, situation.
Well, I see where you're going, but I have to ask you an even tougher question here.
Mm-hmm.
What are you watching out for so that you don't get suckered in by the information, the quote, information being shared on a almost a minute-by-minute basis here that is meant directly to change your mind or influence the way you think about this?
Well, I guess hopefully I can answer this correctly, but what I'm actually looking out for is a genuine response to this tragedy, because I have yet to see that, you know, in regards to our politicians, in regards to public figures. I haven't yet to see a genuine response on, you know, helping, you know, in regards to making sure that a situation like this is preventable. One thing that I have not heard is, you know, there is a darker movement here where there is not just an anti-gay movement, but I'm talking about people who are in line to physically harm, you know, gay and lesbian people. Now, I disagree with their lifestyles, but there is in no way, shape, or form I agree with, you know, doing physical or bodily harm to them. And none of that has come up, you know, and maybe because these same group of people
who want to do physical harm to the lesbian and gay community are the same ones who, you know, call, you know, people of color the N-word and call, you know, Latinos the S-word and whatever derogatory things that they want to say of people of non-white descent.
But do you appreciate a very important political development here? In as much as you noted that individually, these victims, being predominantly people of color, would probably not be politically protected. But do you appreciate the protection that they're getting now because they are a part of a community that is organized and continually organizing and that has reached a point of being able to flex their political muscles?
Oh, yes, I appreciate that wholeheartedly, yes. When you said that, I was sitting up there nodding my head, yes, yes, yes. That definitely does serve as pure political power within the gay and lesbian community. I think people in the black community should take a cue to that. You know, however, the problem is too is that we in the African American community, I guess it's, the problem is that we can't get like our demands straight, whereas in the gay and lesbian community, you know, their basic focus is, you know, marriage rights, you know, and even in the Latino community, immigration is their thing, you know. I guess we have a multitude of issues that we have to hammer out because a lot happens to us, you know, within our own community. So if we have to have a pinpoint topic to go on, and yes, the organization of the gay and lesbian communities is something to look at, you know, and model that type of, you know, that type of response, you know, to certain things.
Well, thank you, Henry, for your contribution today.
Thank
New
you.
Jersey, Eric, you're on the air. Ooh, we have a. Are you there?
Hello, can you hear me?
You're very, very choppy. The connection is really not very good, I'm afraid. Let's try it one more time.
Hi, Yatrice. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, fantastic. Very different.
All right. Thank you. So I was wondering, do you ever get a chance to check like the Drudge Report or InfoWars or Global
yes,
News?
Yes, I do.
Global
from time
news?
To time, yes.
Okay. So there's a lot of stories out connecting the gunmen to the mosque that had a radical imam.
An imam, yeah.
Yeah, and the interesting thing that comes up to me is FBI and has investigated him, and their investigation has been blocked by the Obama-Hillary administration for I think it was a couple times that they tried to investigate him in depth, but the White House blocked that completely, and it's not it just, you know it's been going on. They knew the connections between that specific center teaching, you know like I guess they call it homegrown, but it's homegrown by purpose, on purpose, because they want to create it's a simple what is the formula, divide and conquer, for create chaos in the country and then have the people react crazy and then offer a solution to create more control and safety for the people by disarming the population and using a nice and easy language, and you know not to get into any details. Then you know everything's okay. Just go back to sleep. You know nothing for you to know about the investigations that have been blocked, and you know just just go back to sleep, and that's it.
Well, we do know a couple of things. Invariably, when these kinds of things happen, you can't take everything being broadcast or printed or reported as ironclad truth. Why? Because the bulk of the corroboration is being done by the agencies, which themselves should be under suspicion by any reporter.
Correct, yeah. They got their own point man and
they're all quoting the same thing. They're all saying the same thing. One person said, this is the deadliest mass shooting in history. Everybody so far, without even doing basic research, they reported exactly in that phrase. So a lot of the information, the corroboration of statements of so-called facts and whatnot, will be coming from some kind of official entity. And although it is important, because it gives a sense of authenticity to the reporting, to cite official sources, because that's all you have. You're not there on the scene. You have to relate and you have to relay the information that you're getting from, quote, official sources. But invariably, in a fast unfolding story, and especially one of such an enormous consequence, an enormous tragedy, you have to wait, because you have to talk to people and you carefully have to disassemble things, because all things are not as they appear to be. We're learning, for example, Ray reminded us today, Ray from Florida, that stories are coming forward now that he had been seen at the gay club for a while. We don't know whether it was because he was gay or was interested in men and didn't want to tell anybody, or whether he was scoping the joint. We don't know. But these things take time to ferret out. So we cannot right now believe that we have authoritative information about anything. We have to assume that everything is subject to double, triple, quadruple checking in order to finally arrive at authentic information. The imam that you referred to, and this was done very early in the progression of the story, is an African-American man. And here I found that they were making a case, or the media was trying to make a case, and the media getting its information from official sources. Is something else happening here? Are we seeing a resurgence of the COINTELPRO program now combining with this program to put domestic terrorism in check? So we don't know what it is we're looking at, but we do know we have to be very careful about the information that we are being given. Thanks so much, Eric, for your call. I really appreciate it. Thank you. We have a couple minutes to accommodate Bruce. You're from New York. You're on the air.
Hello, good afternoon, you Therese. I just wanted to raise an issue that nobody seems to be talking about. And it relates to a virtual assumption about gay people and their place in society. And though I don't question anybody's right to do what they want, I'm not sure that we have had a discussion about the acceptance of this as a third rail, if you will, in society. You know, I'm not sure that that gay people themselves don't do violence, for instance, to Mother Nature, right? I'm not sure. That this lifestyle is not almost genocidal, you know. And I'm
you're using some heavy language here, Bruce.
Let's take a look at the
word lifestyle. People say that this is a lifestyle. Yeah. Others would say, no, this is my life.
Yeah. Okay. Well, fine. Whether it's a life or not, I mean, we are speaking on the assumption that this is accepted at the center of our society, you know. And I'm not sure that I'm willing to accept this as a central organizing principle, you know, because I don't know where it's going to lead us. I mean, it seems to be leading us towards annihilation of a human race, you know.
Well, I would strongly disagree, because I would say, I mean, people are entitled to defend their lives. They're entitled. you, I'm presuming from what you're saying, you identify as heterosexual. If tomorrow somebody said, well, this is not the way it ought to be, then you would say, well, that's unfair. Who made you the boss?
But, no,
I'm alive. I'm entitled to my life.
Yeah,
so,
yes, and generally speaking, you know, I accept that people can do what they want to do. But I'm talking about a societal organizational principle. For instance, we don't support GMO foods. You know, we would not support, engineering human beings, for instance. I mean, and I see this along the same kind of lines. You know, I see this as a destructive process, you know, of life itself, you know, and violence against nature, you know.
So let me ask you that, in the context of this particular tragedy,
yes,
are you identifying with this as a human being, or are you identifying
regardless of their political or personal choices or lives, you know, should be just subject to this type of violence, you know, but I'm saying that there's another type of violence that nobody wants to measure, you know. I mean, the violence that is done to future generations, for instance, you know, you're basically saying, well, look, future generations don't have a right to be. Yeah, okay.
Well, people made the argument there should be no interracial marriage. People make the argument that you just should not have an Asian man and an African American woman marrying. It just destroys both genetic strains, and it should not happen.
But you two, those are lesser.
No, no,
that's the
point is, these are societal judgments that become public policy and law. Even it was against the law to intermarry. It was miscegenation was a crime.
Is within the law to have GMO foods, but we don't like GMO foods because we know how much damage they can do to ourselves.
A strong effort here to make a parallel between human determination of life and, you know, GMO foods. I think you have to develop a stronger argument, but I think we should pursue the discussion in any event at another point because we are at the end of the program. But thank you for calling and for contributing. Thank you all for calling and contributing. The issue is we have a major development, a major tragedy, and we are seeing in so many ways how it is being politicized, and that means we are being manipulated, and we have to be very careful. The media will be doing its part to condition our thinking. The government certainly, through the media, will be doing its part to keep our minds off what we ought to be thinking and instead focus on something else. It is a political season, so people have a vested interest in directing our attention in a particular way. So the choreography is occurring. What should we be doing at this point? And how should we be interpreting the so-called facts that are coming to light in the immediate aftermath of this tragedy? We certainly will continue the discussion, but I want to thank you for your participation today. Keep it right here for more great programming, and a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your company. We'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.